TV Campfire Podcast.
Have you seen it yet? OMG.
We're here.
I hate to sound like a broken record.
Oh, no! We're fans.
It just goes up from there.
Oh! All right, we got to a whole different level.
No, you didn't.
We talk TV.
She is the most useless one-dimensional character ever.
Premiere of Spartacus.
Vengeance.
Welcome to the show.
This is podcast number 118, and I am Libya, your host. And this week we have returning guests.
Hi, this is Kathy Udoch.
From?
From theonering.net.
Usually we say what city we're from. But you can give you can plug your website all you want, but tell us where you're from.
I am from Laguna Hill, so this was quite a commute for me.
All right, cool.
And this is Peter from West Hollywood.
And this is Tom from Glendale.
And Susie from Sherman Oaks.
All right, thanks, guys.
That was the messiest one we've done.
That was the most interesting intro ever. I like it. Keeps us on our toes.
Randomness.
All right, let's start off with the news. The first piece of news I have is to remind everybody that Newsroom starts on HBO this week, though by the time this podcast goes up, it would have already aired, so excuse the time continuum slip. The other thing is that ABC pilot called Devious Maids, ABC didn't pick it up, but Lifetime did. And apparently it's based on a telenovela, and it's about, which actually now makes me think it's slightly racist, but it follows the lives of five maids as they take care of the really rich.
And I guess they're devious.
Yes, and apparently, I was like, devious maids?
Perfect for Lifetime, though.
I guess it is perfect.
They're so into soap. They're so into the soap type of feel of things and stuff like that. So having a telenovela transferred over.
Yeah, I guess that works. But I mean, I think that's the one of the few pilots that got turned down that got picked up somewhere else. The other piece of news is, instead of watching season 2 of The Killing, let's just skip to the end. And this is a spoiler alert. If you do not know who the killer is in The Killing, mute for 5 seconds. Alright, so what we find out after the finale is that the killer of Rosie Larson, it was her aunt, Terry Merrick.
Her aunt. I love your Britishness in that.
Her aunt. Yes. No, but I just, I find it amusing because when I watched when I watched first season, did you guys all watch The Killing?
I did the first season.
Peter did.
Unfortunately.
Yes. Well, I mean, the aunt seemed guilty of something. I thought that the aunt was guilty of getting her into the world that got her killed. Mm-hmm. Like, that's why she felt guilty and everything. Because the aunt was, she admitted to like getting her all that lingerie, and she did all these other things for her that I felt was really inappropriate for an aunt to do for a 16-year-old. So I thought that it was probably her fault that she ended up in this situation. I just didn't predict that she was the one who actually killed her.
So this was a show basically trying to figure out who killed
who the killer was.
So in other words, Twin Peaks.
Right, except the thing is, the reason that everybody is angry at the show was the premise was, you watch one season, you follow the case, and they reveal the killer at the end of the season. But they didn't do that. So you get all the way to the end of the season, they're like, this is the killer. And they go, oh, psych, it really isn't the killer.
And
so
the red herrings were ridiculous to the point of insulting.
Yes. And then, so now they're like, well, watch season 2, and at the end of season 2, we'll tell you who the killer is. And I was like, no.
And a yawn was heard throughout the country.
Yeah. A lot of people were like,
well, and also
yeah,
the
no.
pacing of it was very anti-Twin Peaks, which was full of crazy, fun, exciting characters doing amazing things all the time. This was very methodical, very paced, long, silent shots, people stopping and thinking a lot. So, I mean, it got you involved, but in that kind of slow-paced, kind
it's
of
like,
Eastern
it's like they were strutting
European
out too much.
It was way too much.
So you committed not just the time and the effort, you know, trying, but you're also just like, okay,
twiddling
I'm just
thumbs.
Yeah, you know, you really were hoping for the payout.
And it just didn't. And then when because it didn't happen the way they promised, it made people very angry.
Yeah. Right. A lot of these mid-season type shows that are supposedly just going to be a 10, 12 episode arc that are not a mid-season but like a summer thing, you know. And you know you're going to have a start and an end.
But that was what they promised us on The Killing and they didn't follow through.
Yeah.
Anyway, Tom, you have some news.
I have one piece of news. Jennifer Hudson, Academy Award winner for Dreamgirls, is doing an arc next season on Smash.
Woo!
So she will be a new dramatic obstacle for the Megan Hilty and Catherine McPhee characters.
So does that mean you're going to be still watching Smash?
You know, I watched it begrudgingly, but the new showrunner is shaking things up. He's getting rid of the characters people hate and bringing in, you know, bringing in interesting real actors. So I'll watch.
Okay. I will not.
I'm totally down. I liked it enough. So I'll totally come back.
Okay.
All right.
The guy is handling it for us.
Yeah, I know. That is so weird.
I know. Because I was like all excited about it. I watched a couple episodes and I was just like going, yeah, how long can you draw out the tryouts? And
I watched the pilot and I was like, I'm done.
Me too.
So
even if Commodore Norrington is, you know, fun to watch, but whatever.
All right, let's start up with the shows. First up, we're going to talk about True Blood. And finally, Chris Maloney was in this episode. That's all I have to say. And I rewatched that scene probably twice. Two or three times.
Which
scene? It took me several attempts to get to his scene, by the way.
Yeah.
Well, I can imagine because the rest of the episode was snoozeworthy. Like,
oh my gosh. Yeah. I literally stopped the episode halfway through after Terry's flashback. the season pass.
Terry has a flashback? Wow.
Yes. Well, no, I literally, when Arlene goes to visit his old army buddy, literally just fast forwarded because I did not care. At all.
Well, so that's what multitasking is for, guys. Read the paper, read your magazines while it's
playing.
Playing
the computer.
Yeah, that's what you do.
Peter, you were trying to say something?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, man. Like, it's just not doing it for me. I agree. Christopher Maloney's, his entrance was good. Actually, it was weird because earlier in the episode, they have them stuck in those prison cells, and there's a voice overhead. And I'm like, well, that doesn't sound like Christopher Maloney. And it ends up being the other guy.
Right.
I don't know
right.
what the actor's name is. But,
oh, Christopher yeah. Heyerdahl.
Yes.
Yeah, and he's good, you know. But, I don't know why I'm watching this still. I don't really care about anything. And I really don't like the Tara thing. The whole, like, I mean, they should have just kept her. I really thought that she was going to be dead, but we were going to see her as, like, a ghost through Lafayette, which would have been fine with me, but, like, what they're doing. And then, also, did I miss something, like, I liked when Pam, once again, Pam was the best part of the episode, and I am a little curious about seeing Pam, her origin story. I'm like, okay, well, I like Pam. But, oh, wait, did I miss something? So she tells, she's like, you can, you know, as your creator, you cannot kill Suki or Lafayette, and then she's like, you stay in the house. Mm-hmm. So then I'm like, okay, so she has to do what she says, but at the end
she just
leaves. Out.
Yeah.
Rule?
I have nothing. They broke their own rules. I got no reason.
Yeah.
Sounds like it says you have to do what the creator says.
Right, I agree with you, and then they broke their own rules. I don't understand.
They're probably doing it to set up Terra's people like a wild card.
I mean, I know this sounds really cheesy, but does the sentence have to say, like, Mother May I?
Simon says.
Yeah. Well, like the invitation into the house, where
right.
that is an unwritten rule, and you can see them get sucked out, so we know that there is some sort of supernatural rule.
There is,
and
yeah, and the creator.
The creator.
If they tell you something as your creator, you have to do it. And then Terra was just like, whatever, and just did whatever she wanted.
Well, is she happy being a vampire?
No.
I gave up halfway through last season, so
She got her head, she almost got her head blown off, and so they thought she was going to be retarded or something, or something wrong with her.
So they did it to save her life.
They did to save, well, she was actually already dead.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Oh.
She was actually dead.
Well, then maybe her brain is messed up and the control of listening to your creator is broken.
See, that might be the only explanation, but bringing her back was a mistake. And the only word she uttered the entire time was, I hate you for doing this to me. And then she leaves.
Yeah,
well, okay, in the books, there's an Elvis. There's Elvis.
I know, Bubba.
Okay. And so maybe bringing a brain damaged Terra back is their way of taking care of
except that they didn't really do that because she spoke.
Yeah.
Yeah,
she seems like she's going to be okay. She's just like really like
angry.
On the edge. Like the really,
isn't
she's going to push the envelope.
Always angry?
I know.
Well, that's
but now
it.
She's
a vampire.
Always a bit brain damaged too.
Right. A brain damaged, angry vampire Terra. Yeah. good plan.
I think from now on, my viewing I will only be watching the storylines involving Eric and Bill and the Authority. I think that's the only storyline I care about. Well, okay.
Did you notice how they had a cover of When I Fight Authority, Authority Always Wins for the end titles?
That was the name the name of the episode. The episode was called I Fight Authority.
Yeah.
They always do that with the end credit song.
I just thought it was so on the nose.
Well, when I saw the title, I was like, oh wow, I guess we're gonna be dealing with the Authority this week. Mm-hmm. All right, so I'm going to go with thumbs down most around the room. Except I will have to say, the Chris Maloney scene where he comes in.
What is he?
He is the head of the Authority. He is the Authority.
Oh, really?
So,
he's like the president.
Yeah.
He's like the
guy. So he has the best thing about that scene was when he finds, when Bill tries to negotiate for his life, and he's like, well, don't kill us because the king of Louisiana. What was it? Mississippi. Mississippi.
Oh,
Mississippi. He's like, Edgington. He's like, we totally didn't kill him. We buried him and now he escaped. So use us to go catch him. And Maloney's character was like, you didn't kill him. He was like, why would you not kill him?
And of course, when I saw him back in the commercials, I'm like going, really? I thought he was dead. I thought they wrapped that one up.
No, well, they buried him alive. And
they buried him alive in concrete.
Their excuse was killing him would have been too easy.
The concrete was all exploded and everything, so yeah.
Right,
yeah.
And so their excuse was, oh, well, we wanted him to suffer because we really hated him, and I felt blah, blah, blah. And he was like, do you know what would happen if I got to do everything I felt like doing? He's like, right now, I feel like staking you. And he grabs Bill by the hair and puts his stake. And you see, Bill looks like he's about to hyperventilate. Like, it was a really good scene, and they did a really good job of showing how menacing he is and how in control he is.
Yeah.
And his suit, by the way, impeccable.
The blonde lady, she's always impeccable.
Yeah, but this was like, it was like $2,000 suit. It was nice. Anyway, so they basically established him as really the Authority. And also for those people who watch Spartacus,
Peter Mensah
is his like second or third in command, something like that.
Wow.
But Peter Mensah, I was trying to remember his name in Spartacus, and I blanked.
Anomaeus,
but I was thinking of the other one, the title.
Doctori.
Thank you. You are the Spartacus champion. You are coming up with all the titles for me. I appreciate it. So I was like, Doctori, that's what I was trying to think of. But yeah, so he is now on here. And there was this weird shot where it was like Peter Mensah in the background and Chris Maloney was in the foreground. It was just the two shot of them, and I was like, pretty. And I was just
screen cap.
No, I was like, I like that shot right there. But that is the best thing about the show, and leaves us on a high note. So let's move on.
Was this the debut episode?
No,
the second one. Second one. The first one, I was angry because there was no Christopher Maloney, and I was
trying to lead up to that whole thing.
I was like, you gotta be kidding me! I wasted an hour of my life, and there was no Maloney. All right. So the next one is next up is Girls, and it's the Girls finale, and Peter is very excited about that.
Peter, what'd you think?
It's great. It was funny because I've been complaining about how Mad. I mean, I'm not really complaining, but I found it like I've been interested in how like television lately, their big episode is the penultimate episode. Like,
right.
I think Mad Men was like that. I think Game of Thrones was like that. And in fact, I've
done that for years.
Yeah, you know. So I was pretty happy that with Girls. I mean, that was pretty much a big finale. I was like, all right. I was like, that was. Pretty, I was like, character gets married. You know, she gets her money stolen. She's basically alone at the. You know, she's got no roommates. She's alone, and I'm assuming around Coney Island or something. She wakes up in the middle of the morning, like on the subway, and she has no idea like what her future is, you know. Like, so I thought, I thought it was a really good episode. The only major thing I keep thinking about though is that while the main story, I mean, I'm not saying that Girls is a huge arc or anything, but if the main story is, you know, is Hannah going to be able to survive on her own, you know, get it. You know, become independent, get a job, not depend on her parents, all that kind of stuff. By the end of the first season, none of that is resolved. In fact, if anything, she's in a worse place, you know, in a weird way than before. But strangely, I'm definitely in for the second season, and I think this was my favorite show of the year. However, I am wondering if this only was one season, even though the end kind of leaves things up in the air, I wonder if I would have been okay with that. Because I kind of think it's a really good 10-episode season. So I don't really know. A part of me is like, do I really need a second season? But But obviously I do because of the questions I have. And then the only other thing I'll say, and then Tom, you can start going, is I definitely thought this episode was stronger since the last, maybe episode 5. If I'm right, Tom, episodes 1 through 5 are written...
Pretty much by her, directed, by Lena Dunham.
6, 7, 8, and 9 are all co-written by various people. And while I thought all the episodes were good, I definitely think the ones where it's all Lena Dunham, I think, are the strongest. So I was happy that the last episode was all her, because I thought it was stronger than the previous episodes. So what did you think?
I wouldn't disagree with you. I'm in for season 2. I mean, the thing with Hannah is she's so immature. She's not ready to grow up. I mean, her, you know, when she's in the hock to her roommate for all that back rent.
Oh, yeah.
Mom offers her money on a silver platter, and she doesn't take it. It's like, seriously,
but actually, I was kind of happy that she didn't take the money.
Oh.
I know it's saying about owing the friend, but there was a part of me that felt like that was important for her to have to realize she can't just go back to her parents, you know?
I just thought it was... And then she picks a fight with her roommate.
Yeah, well, that's true.
It's like, what's wrong with you? It's like, you know, you don't pick a fight with somebody you're in hot to several hundreds, if not thousands of dollars.
Oh, we were commenting over here that it's interesting that a show called Girls, only the guys in the podcast
the guys are watching.
Smash. Well, we won't go into that.
No, wait. Tom and I would both agree. Girls is way better than Smash.
No, our comment was we have 3 women over here, and none of us watch Smash or Girls. So that's all. It was just a funny comment.
We're in touch with our female side.
I can't speak for Tom, but I feel like I find the character on Girls, and especially Hannah, very interesting. But actually, like, I mean, you're right, technically they are, like, I shouldn't necessarily have anything in common with not only a girl, but a person who's, like, 22 or something, or 24. But I do find their situations very relatable and interesting. Even though they do a lot of bad things, and there's things that I don't have pity for them for, there are other things about the show that I feel like speak in a more general way, which to me is always a good sign of good writing. You always want your characters to seem specific to your type, your generation, or age, but you still want it to be relatable that somebody who's 80 could still sympathize, still say, well, I'm not this person, but I can understand that. And I think Girls does that.
I think you're right. Yeah, you don't want to, if the show's about a 20-year-old, you don't want your audience to just be 20-year-olds. So,
exactly.
So, yeah.
Tom, as I recall, Tom is a big fan of good writing, and I think Girls has...
It's got strong writing and strong...
It's very strong writing. I mean, like, you know, it's not just clever dialogue. It's also the fact that the way that characters are moving in and out of each other's lives, like, they, you know, they'll call back to things that we saw in the second episode, and it's just, I don't know, it's really thoughtful, you know, or at least I think so.
Okay.
So.
I hope she doesn't go back to that boyfriend in season 2, because he skeeves me out.
Oh, man, he skeeves me out too, but I gotta say, I respected him more somewhat in the last few episodes. I never really liked him, but the more he started, you know, because he has that line where he's like, you know, I told you that if I commit to something, I commit to it, you know, 200% or whatever. And so he finally commits to her, and of course, you know, things don't go well. I actually kind of felt bad for him, even though I agree with you. I agree that he is kind of skeezy to me, but I can help for him.
When he peed in the shower, I'm like, okay, that's happy. Especially
that's
when they're showering together.
Comes. That's how
it's
you relate to
gross.
It.
All right, let's wrap this one up.
You know,
Thumbs up for Girls.
I think it's the best new show of the year, but obviously we'll have to see where we go. You know, obviously the fall season's starting, so we'll see. But I really like it.
All right, next up is The Glades. And we have, I watched The Glades season 1 and season 2, but I don't
it's
think...
still on?
Yes. Honestly, I didn't think it was... I think I watched the first 2 episodes, but I'm surprised it's still on too.
I got bored with the relation. I think, because the reason I was watching it was not because of the crime drama, because their cases were not that interesting. I was watching it for the characters, but then what happened
the characters
was...
characters aren't that interesting
well,
either.
I like the main guy, but his relationship with the nurse, whatever she ended up being...
Kaylee.
It frustrated me to the point where I was just like, I can't watch the show anymore. So I stopped watching. So
and now they're in a committed relationship.
Okay, so apparently I missed the big moment.
Which actually happened over the break. It's just like, I guess they sort of were committed to it.
Are you serious?
And so
it happened off screen.
Well, just being committed to it because her husband finally got out. She finally asked for the divorce. He went into witness protection, and he's gone.
Yeah, I saw that part.
Yeah. So I guess we sort of like the transition from them being in a committed relationship. Just sort of, it's just part of life, and so they just now are in a committed relationship.
Boo.
But she gave up going to Atlanta and taking the job and the teaching so that she could also then take, you know, the doctor school and all that kind of stuff. And so the first two things, she's trying to get a job because her hospital's closed. And he's like, you know what? We can do this for a year. Go to Atlanta, take the job, get into the school, do
your
thing.
Off the show for a year.
She's not really off the show because they talk all the time on the phone and he helped her move in. Although we're only two episodes in, so who knows what's going to happen. But I don't think she's actually off the show, but he let her go do what she needed to do to complete her life, as opposed to having her sacrifice her happiness and her education for a relationship.
Yeah, I get you, but
which
I just
like... Which
is
an adult thing to do.
Yeah.
On both of their parts.
Yeah, but he's such a child. He really
is.
He
is such a child, which is why he gets along so well with her son.
True, but he's such a child. Like, at first I thought it was cute, and then I found it irritating. So,
I think it's because he's so smart that he's generally the smartest person in the room, and he acts like it.
I don't think he's the smartest person in the room. He's not like, there's detective shows when you watch a detective and you're like, wow, he's really smart. Yeah. He's not that guy. When I watch the show, I never think he's the smartest person in the room.
Yeah, okay. I can see how you'd think that, yeah. it's because they don't back up why he suddenly comes up with certain ideas and why he goes in certain directions that... They ask him to act like the smartest guy in the room, but they forgot to write it.
Right. There you go. Because when I see him do stuff, but they never... It's not like, oh, I've had this epiphany and I've figured this out. Because when he goes and talks to the coroner, he doesn't know what the coroner's talking about half the time. He doesn't seem like a really smart guy to me. He seems like...
He'd rather be out golfing.
Yeah, and he's very much a cop that goes with his gut. And so they basically say he figures out these cases with his gut. His gut's very good, but that does not necessarily equal really smart to me.
Yeah.
So, I mean, especially I watch freaking Sherlock and all these, and I watch The Mentalist. These guys are brilliant. And then you add the Glade
guy. I know when you add Jane, exactly. When you see Jane thinking, and he's doing things, you always know there's one, two, and three steps behind everything he does.
Right.
You're right.
And this guy does not do that. So he is not in the same caliber as who I consider smart, so. Yeah.
But he is very pretty to look at.
I'm not denying
his... And he plays Rollerball very well, so I always, you know.
Anyway, let's move on.
Okay,
sorry.
Let's go on.
Moving on.
So, yes, I liked it.
So, thumbs up.
Yes, for me. All right.
So, now you have heard. next up, let's talk about Longmire. And this week was... I'm trying to remember. It was with the horses.
Yes,
the
horses.
Fire. The beautiful horses.
Oh, the burning of the horse.
I have to say, though, seeing those horses, the horse that survived with all those burns was kind of icky.
Like, well, it was supposed to be icky.
I know.
It was supposed to hit people right in the gut.
Well, I don't know about gut. It's just like, ew, more than gut. But I got what you're saying because the whole point was you're supposed to... And I felt like the one thing that I felt about this episode was I could see them trying to pull my heartstrings about the horses. And I was like, nah, stop it. Yeah. But the character is so good that I actually... Because there was a point where I was getting annoyed. But then he started doing stuff, and he's just, like, mesmerizing.
Well,
you
realize that both of these shows are led by two Australian actors.
Is he Australian?
They're both
Australian. He's Australian, too?
No wonder I didn't know who I was like, that's why he hasn't been in anything.
Exactly. He has, just down in Australia.
Yeah, well, it's not listed on IMDb, so.
These foreigners coming in, you're taking all our jobs.
Foreigners. I know, I was talking about on Fringe, the two leads are Australian. I'm like, what the heck? Stop it.
Yeah,
you're good, but stop.
Lots of Aussies coming up. And,
all right.
Your favorite.
This was my first time watching Longmire. It wasn't bad. I don't know if it's something I would go out of my way to watch on a regular basis, but it was well shot, well acted, well produced. I thought the plot line was a little eh.
Yeah, the horses. I think this was the weakest one.
Well, I think
all
the characters are still... We're still trying to get to know who some of these characters are.
Right.
I mean, it's only three episodes in or so, right?
Right. It is. But I just felt like the storyline this week was weaker than the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, because I can't actually remember who we discovered the killer was.
There was no killer. He faked his death.
Oh, that's right. Okay, never mind.
That's why you don't remember a kill.
That's right. I was like, yeah, okay. I completely forgot. I know there was a shootout in the house, and I was like, okay, and yeah.
But then he ends up dying at the end to save his family.
Yeah.
So
all I can say is C. Thomas Howell does not look good. He's like my age.
Well, that's
yeah. He looks used and thrown
yikes.
Out.
But who's it? The bartender?
Lou Diamond Phillips.
Did a movie together at the same? Like, didn't they do a movie together?
Oh, yeah, back in the day they were.
Yeah, they were like the same age. Yeah. Lou looks way better than he does.
It's like he traveled the last couple of decades on his face or something.
He was not all that great at looking in this episode, but that wasn't the point. The point was the acting, so let's just leave it at that. But what I did like was, I liked that at the shootout at the house, like, literally every cop in the county all showed up, so there's like five of them, because that's all the cops that they have, and they're like, so how do we handle this? And they're like, well, in the city, this would be when we would call SWAT. And they're like, yeah, we don't have SWAT. So
that's what they said, well, should we call the res?
Right, you know, to get more backup.
Yeah, exactly.
But he apparently is fighting with all the cops on the res. So he's like, no.
Which I found to be a really interesting thing. They're like, oh, you got rid of our chief. And I'm like, yeah, the dude broke the law. So of course...
Yeah, but they were mad at him for it.
I know. I'm like going, I guess maybe what, they wanted to bust him themselves?
No, they just didn't want to bust him at all. And so they were mad at him about it. And he's like, you know, I follow what I got to do. But I like his quiet intensity.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. He's so. Definitely, I mean, it's a modern Western. And so your lawman typically is your silent type. I mean,
I was waiting for you to finish that sentence. Sorry.
I'm sorry. I was trying to figure out. Yeah, but they are usually the strong silent type.
Yeah, that's my favorite type. I like the strong silent type because I like being able to, when I know the character well enough, I like being able to read their faces and know what they're thinking.
Exactly.
So
yeah,
that's my thing. But anyway, this week's episode, like I said, I think it was of the three. I think it was the weakest.
Yeah.
It was weaker than the pilot.
Ouch. But wow. Yeah, I kind of get what you're saying there, because I saw the pilot, and then I wasn't sure if I was going to continue on.
I mean, I've only seen the pilot, and I actually like the strong silent type. I thought the lead actor is interesting, but I really thought everything else was horribly generic. In fact, I would even disagree with Tom. I don't even think it's that well produced. I mean, I honestly can't name one shot in the show where I'm like, well, that was a nice shot. No, I can't name anything.
Last night's episode.
Again, I haven't seen the third episode, so I can't judge that one.
But also, pilots usually don't have as much money as the rest
of the
show.
That's true. The pilot didn't really do it for me. And, you know, I'm nice to see Lou Diamond Phillips getting work, and nice to see Starbuck getting work, but, I thought the pilot especially just had a lot of lines of dialogue that I thought were really cliche, but now you guys are saying the third episode was the weakest.
The characters, I think, were better, but what I'm saying is the actual police part, which I always think is not the most important part of these kind of shows anyway. Mm-hmm. But the actual police procedural portion of the episode, I think, was weaker.
The case of the week,
I think, was weaker. But the actual characters and what they were doing was not weaker.
Okay. All right. Good.
And we did get the reveal of the daughter's love interest.
Was that? I thought that was the second episode.
Was that the second episode?
Yeah,
maybe it was the second episode.
Yeah, which I thought was a little cheesy, but...
Last week's episode was directed by Christopher Schulach, who was one of the executive producers of ER and was with that show for 15 years. So he's also on Southland. So, I mean, this is a Warner Brothers show, and they're not... You know, they want it to succeed because he's an A-list TV director.
Yeah, I mean, I like it anyway.
I think we're going to have to wait a few more episodes for the characters to really gel and...
The jury's out.
Yeah.
Well, I like it. My jury's in. So.
I know. I like it too, but then again, I'm a sucker for Westerns.
All right, next up, we want to talk about Eureka.
Yay! Smarter Carter.
Smarter Carter!
Yeah. Fun episode.
This was a very fun episode.
It was very fun.
This is what happens when a regular person turns into an evil genius.
Yes. Well, he did try to be evil.
Thanks to his stepson.
Well, yeah. The thing is he's always... What's the kid's name? I forgot his name.
Kevin.
Kevin is always doing stuff that he thinks is going to help and actually ends up blowing up the town.
Because he's a teenager.
Because he's a kid. Yeah. And he's really smart. And B, he wants Jack to work out with his mom.
Yeah, he does. He
and
really
he wants
likes
the family
Jack.
To love
yeah.
him.
His
and,
intentions
yeah.
were really cute because usually when Kevin does get caught up in stuff like that, I'm like, stupid kid. It's like the Wesley Crusher of Eureka, you know? But in this case, when he did it, the reason behind it and the fact that you don't know, there's no setup for him doing it because he just brings the donuts and the coffee and you're like, you're none the wiser, just like Carter.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't realize it until later.
Yeah,
you're
how
did he do it? And I love that because his only reason for it was just because he wanted his uncle to accept Carter. And I thought, well, that's actually really sweet that they put that in there.
Yeah, it was.
You know, he had that really nice motive for it.
And the fact that Wesley Carter is actually on the show.
But, yeah, there was that. Nice. So I liked that storyline a lot. And actually, the B storyline too with Holly.
Holly is
great. Oh yeah.
I mean, that was really sweet too. They got that whole thing. I love, however, the years, the relationship between the fact that Fargo's grown so much. He used to be such a little annoying twerp and now
pushed all the wrong buttons.
Yeah, and he's so great now in his relationship with
I think the beard was a mistake though, but Holly.
Yes. Yes, so his relationship with Holly, but also with what's her name? I'm blanking on his name. Joe's boyfriend.
Oh, Zane.
Zane, thank you. I'm thinking of his real name, Neil. So their Niall. Relationship, Niall, thank you, Niall Grayson. And so they're just so Niall Matter and Neil Grayson, right?
Yes.
Thank you. Okay. my brain is going too many of them.
I know. People's names.
But I like the fact that they're actually in it together and that Zane's really, again, someone doing something for pure reasons or for, you know, for solid reasons.
This is the first time, one of the first times I think Zane is just being a good guy.
And the funny thing is, if you think about it, so Zane's being a really good guy in this one. Kevin's being a sweetheart and a really good guy in this one. And it's funny because Carter, who's usually
the good guy with the big heart,
is the one that gets dialed back to being the cold one. So it was a really cool balance.
And our poor little Deputy Andy, you know, it's like the second time that he's
been evil.
Yeah,
Andy.
Exactly. You know, in the other world and this, it's like going, wait a minute, he can't catch a break.
Well, and it also really proves to you that Allison really loves Carter for Carter and not for his brain at all, because she was, when he got super smart, she was freaked out. It wasn't, she thought there was something wrong, but I think she would have been okay with it if he was still Carter.
If he was still himself. The selfless person who always goes and puts himself on the line for the sake.
Right.
And the fact that he had to sacrifice, that you can't have brains and heart kind of thing. It's like it was funny it was one or the other.
It reminded me about Flowers of Algernon, which was, you know, the movie Charlie. Mm-hmm. Except for the fact that that character realized it was going to end. He got super, super smart from whatever they put him on and stuff like that, and then all of a sudden he got very sad when he realized it was going to end and he was going to go back to being...
Mm-hmm. Well, Carter realized that.
He did that too.
Carter
did
too.
To do it
because they had to actually like give him a shot or something.
Yeah.
But it was... He didn't want to go back because he thought that
he thought
always...
this is what everyone expected from him.
Right. And I mean, I suppose if you're in a town of geniuses and you're the one guy that isn't a genius, it would, you know, plague you for a while.
And what always gets me, and this was something that Allison's previous beau always... It always grated on me. It's like, no matter... how dumb they all thought he was always the one that was smart enough to figure out what was going on.
Right.
His detective skills were unparalleled. Nobody else figures out the things that he figures out because he's looking at things completely different than they are.
Right. Well, he's looking at it from a very wide angle and everybody else is all in the details.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you're thinking about Stark.
Yeah.
Stark yes, was totally Stark. About Stark.
Nathan Stark was such a jerk. He was gorgeous, but he was such a jerk.
Arrogant,
which is why he came back
rich.
To that one episode with the shirt on, and you're just like, ah.
Maybe when Peter and I aren't around, y'all can just talk about how hot all these guys in the shows
are.
Well,
we do that on the podcast too, so you know, we don't care
do it with
you're
around
there.
And without. Don't worry.
Yeah.
but overall, I think as an episode, it was just this
and
final
I hope
season.
They come to
Comic Con,
even though I know that the season's about to come to an end.
I don't
Jamie
Paglia
has already said they can't.
Yeah.
Or not. So
yeah.
We're not even gonna get a Cafe Diem.
Well,
over at
I mean, but the thing is also the they're finished shooting last year.
They closed it last year. This is just they're running it to get it their money's worth. But it's done.
They were done shooting a while ago.
It's not to get their money's worth. The show's, I mean, they got to finish airing the episodes.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so wrapping up, thumbs up for Eureka.
Yep.
Yeah, big.
Well, that is true. No Cafe Diem this year.
That's what I was wondering.
But, you know, that's how Sci-Fi actually saved money on having a booth, is they would have the Cafe Diem, because then the menu had all of their shows on it.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's still a great idea.
Well, and they might keep it anyway, even if it doesn't promote Eureka. It was one of their shows.
Yeah, because
they can still highlight
it. Because it promoted everything.
Shows.
Well, we'll see. If for those not in the know, we've tangented off into Comic-Con.
Yes.
And,
sorry.
And about
a little premature, aren't we?
Yes. I'm just...
Actually, only 2 weeks.
Yeah, we only got... Is it
3 weeks?
Two and a half.
She is seriously
for
counting
those,
down.
For those of us that are going down on Tuesday, the 10th of July, yes, it's 2.5 weeks.
I am going down on Friday. I will see you guys late.
Okay.
Okay. Next up, we'll talk about Bunheads and Peter This is your show. I blame you for my lost time.
You have to enunciate that really well because it almost sounded like you said something else.
Peter?
No.
Bun.
Bun heads, butt heads.
Oh, that's bun heads.
Thank you.
Okay.
Ballet dancers.
Yes.
Like, wait, what?
I honestly, I didn't really like this episode as much. I thought the pilot was... I like the pilot. I like Amy Sherman-Palladino's voice that I got to know and like on Gilmore Girls. This episode confirms that the husband is dead, which was not what Livia wanted, because her getting, you know, the main character getting to know this man was one of the things she liked, and now that's gone.
I thought that was what you liked, too.
We spent a lot of time with the young bunheads, the young kids who kind of skip school, and that was all right, you know? And then the other thing was that sometimes I wonder if when people do podcasts or reviews or whatever, people who watch a lot of movies and watch a lot of television and stuff, sometimes I wonder if, like, it's fair to be critical of certain things that might be overly familiar to us. My example would be that in the episode, the mom, who was also the mom on Gilmore Girls, basically they have to figure out what to do for the funeral, for the memorial. And the whole episode, characters don't necessarily even want to say the word that he's dead or deaf. You know, even the girls, like, they want to give each other a look. And the mom in particular kind of wants to try to be up about it. But we know where this is leading. If you've seen any television show or movie, I know where this is going. And so sometimes I feel like if I'm like a 14-year-old girl and I'm watching Bunheads, I've never seen this experience before, maybe it's fine. It's interesting to see this character go through this and be like, wow, you know, really... She has to put on this happy face, but she has to really come to terms with the fact that her son has died. But for a person who's watched a lot of television and a lot of and seen a lot of movies, I just find it very, like, obvious. And I'm just like, really? This is the whole episode? This is what we're going through? I can't believe we're not. So I don't know. I mean, Livia, what do you think? I mean, like, is it just that if you've seen too many of these situations, you become a little jaded.
Well,
like,
there is that, but also Palladino's not a brand new writer, so she should know better. The other problem I have is when I was watching it, not only does it feel like Gilmore Girls, even the music, they're doing the la 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 la, that the themes that they used to do on Gilmore Girls, they're doing the same themes. I was like, are you kidding me? Like, come up with new music. So that actually bothered me. And then I will actually say something which I never thought I would say, which is Kelly Bishop, her big breakdown scene when she's yelling at the girl that I don't remember her name that we were calling Lorelai. When they have their big dramatic scene and they're yelling at each other, it felt bad. It felt like I could see them acting. And I could see they weren't acting well. Which I never would have thought I would have ever said about Kelly Bishop. She normally knocks it out of the park.
I would agree. I agree.
And this was pretty.
And you know what? I'm okay with it being, you know, Palladino going back to what she knows. I mean, the very fact that the whole thing takes place in a town called, like, what is it, Paradise Falls or something? I mean, like, you know, because what was Gilmore Girls? What was their town called?
Oh, man.
I keep wanting to say Hollow, or I think that's
yes, him. Hollow is part of it, but I can't remember.
It's not Sleepy Hollow.
No.
But yes, she's clearly going, look, this is what worked on Gilmore Girls. I'm going to use this for this ABC Family show. I'm not against that, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, at least pretend a little more. Don't use the same theme music. Like, her theme music on Gilmore Girls is very unique. And so her using it again just feels like, wait, what a minute, what am I watching?
I feel like also on Gilmore Girls, you had these, you know, admittedly eccentric, quirky characters that had these things to them. You know, like, who is this Suki person? Who is this best friend of Rory? And what's this strange guy? Like, there were, in this show, I'm like, I'm not really feeling that. Like, I'm like, we've got the girl who obviously was in love with the guy who died, but she's not that interesting. We've got the young girls, yeah, they're okay. You know, like, so it really kind of all rests on the lead woman, and she's good. I think you and I can both agree she's very likable. You know, I like her as an actress, and is she a Broadway star or something? I think she's a professional dancer or something.
Something like that, but I do like her. I think she's compelling, like,
Yeah, I like her too.
When Kelly Bishop and the other chick that was in love with the son, they were all planning the funeral without her and talking around her. She's like, yes, and I'm leaving now. Like, I liked her sarcasm, but it's, no, without the guy, And then, predictably, they give you the reason at the very end why she has to stay, which is he rewrote his will, and, like, they were married for 24 hours, and he already rewrote his will.
Which really, any court would not, any court would be fine with a marriage of less than 24 hours. Like, really, it would not hold up.
No, yeah. And he did it over the phone. So, I'm like, if the mom really felt like fighting that, she could have got the property.
You're forgetting this is TV logic, not real.
I know.
But it was ridiculous. It was really...
The viewers live in the real world.
Well, I'm just saying, it was just like... Yeah, it was ridiculous. And so that's going to be her reason why she stays. Because there's no other reason why she would ever stay. But now she basically can stay in this place rent-free and she owns everything. But, so she's like, I think I'm done. I no longer need to watch any more Bundy.
I might watch one more. We'll see. Maybe.
Okay, next.
I have a friend online who's one comment. You know, she last 2 weeks or so, I've seen her comment about watching Bunheads because I didn't watch it. And her one comment was, "It makes me sad. I miss Gilmore Girls."
Thank you.
Well, yeah.
That's basically all it does is me. It's like, oh, I remember when she had a good show that I really enjoyed. All right, next up. Let's talk about Rizzoli and Isles. And I'm interested, Tom, you said this is the first time you've ever seen the show.
No, this is my second time. I watched
it. You watched what? What did you watch before?
I watched it over Christmas time at my mom's.
Oh, okay. I don't remember
I mean, the case was interesting. I'm always wary when they have a case involving, you know, vets with PTSD. But they had a nice kind of twist on it. And then... the B plot with the new boyfriend
that
for,
was
just the way
Isles
he comes back to life
interesting.
Is yeah. extremely unique.
Oh yeah, the way she came back. Oh, it started off her very first interaction with him was grabbing his
well, because he was dead.
Yeah, she was like
he
she's
thought
like,
he was dead.
Yes, but she's like, he's still got a pulse. I was like, that's an interesting way to get a pulse.
Yeah. It's like going, okay, so she opens up the thing and they're like, oh, isn't he cute? And that was his reaction. I'm like, God.
He must have been awake. Yeah, it was like
Eddie Cibrian.
Yes.
Yes.
So then she gives him a tracheotomy, and that leads to a date.
Okay. Which leads to sculpting in the nude.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. And I like, they were doing their spray painting or whatever on the wall.
They're tagging,
and then she gets all, she thinks she's going to get arrested. That was so hilarious.
So,
she's like, I
so
can't
from
have
the
this on my record.
Two times I've seen this show, I would take it that Isles is the really uptight one.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
And Rizzoli is the down-to-earth, you know, grim and gritty one.
Yeah, that's pretty much right. so. But, I mean, I like their chemistry together. They are very much the odd couple, but they're best friends. So,
yes.
And I like that about them.
And
the case,
it looks like it took her two episodes to get over the you killed my father thing.
Well,
so.
He didn't die.
Well, yeah, he didn't die. And it was pretty...
Oh, he didn't die?
No. But it was pretty tense.
It was very tense.
I thought they did a really good job. But because the show is about their friendship, you kind of had to get them back to being friends.
Yeah.
And because this show is not 22 episodes, it's only like... 10 or 13, they kind of had to do it pretty fast. So,
like white collar, you don't want Peter and Neo at odds for too long.
Exactly.
No.
Right.
Royal pain, same thing. Which,
we'll take your word for it.
Oh, yes. So, I thought this episode was a fun episode.
I liked the reveal about her former boyfriend, or her, you know, would-be boyfriend.
Oh, the guy,
oh,
yeah.
I kind of figured, I mean, when he first said I was spraying legs like that, I was just thinking, and all of a sudden I realized... This is a vet center where they're treating people for trauma and injury and everything. And I kind of was like going, there must be more to it. Because the second time when he didn't stand up, I'm like going, I know what he's doing.
Well, the first time, I was like, I thought he had no legs.
Yeah.
I thought that
except for the fact that he did sort of stand up somewhat.
No, but I thought he had like prosthetic
legs. Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's what I thought they were going to do too.
Yeah, I thought he had prosthetic legs. And the fact that she didn't figure it out and the entire audience did is like, come on. She's a detective.
Yeah, well...
But she's a woman detective, so when she's overwhelmed
and she's
by
emotional.
Emotion...
Didn't just say that, did you?
But
okay,
that's
let's
the way
talk.
He played the episode.
I know.
Yeah, she was overly emotional
yeah.
about it, but I was actually angry with him because she really did like him.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so...
Yeah.
I was
he's having a pity
he
party.
Is being
obviously,
a wuss.
We have not seen the last of him.
Hopefully not.
Chris
no,
Vance, that actor did the arc on... He was one of Michael's suspicious handlers on Burn Notice.
Well, yes. He's already been on several episodes of Rizzoli and Isles, so it's not like this is a one-time deal.
But no, obviously they're not done with this arc, though.
Yeah, no, they're not. No.
I hope not, and I know she's not going to care, you know, because she really cares about him. But whatever. Anyway, so thumbs up. I thought this was a good week for Rizzoli and Isles. Love it. Next up, we're going to talk about Necessary Roughness for the second or third time, because this is a show Marcia really liked. But I watched the first couple episodes, and
has it gotten any better this season?
No, first season.
It kind of depends on what you consider better. I've always liked it, but then again, I like a lot of the characters.
Hated what's his the football player.
Well, I don't think you're supposed to like him because he's over
jerk.
The top.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
but he's so over the top awful. I just no.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and that's the thing, is actually now that he's coming back from being shot and everything like that, he's actually trying to get back to his roots. And, I mean, it's to the point where he wants to give up on football because he's trying to get back to his roots. And, of course, his roots are from the small, poor little town where people get shot all the time. So it's like, why would you want to go back to that? Why are you fantasizing that as being a better time? And the girl that he's with actually sort of points that out to him and says, get your ass back to...
Now, Evan Handler wasn't on the show last year, was he? The team owner?
No, he is new. He is a new wrinkle that's going to be what drives the whole season. Because he's trying to drive the team into the ground so that his wife doesn't get as much money out of the divorce.
Are you kidding?
Oh, it's the LA Dodgers story.
Yeah. Oh, it's totally, this is totally the Dodgers story right now. It's totally paralleling that. And his character is so wackadoodle. He's a blast to watch.
Well, he's a fun actor.
Yeah, he is a fun actor.
I like the enforcer guy. I did like
him. Oh, yeah, Scott Cohen? Yeah. He's...
But, I mean, I didn't like enough about it to keep watching. I like the lead, because, you know what?
Kelly Thorne is great.
I liked her, but I thought my problem with the show was I couldn't tell what kind of a show it was.
Yeah.
And I couldn't tell where they were going, and I didn't know if I cared, was really kind of how
it went. Well, they treat... having various athletes and people with various psychological problems to her at pretty much the way you do with police things. She comes up with great things, but sometimes, I mean, my mom was a psychologist, so I'm kind of ahead of her in the therapy sessions and stuff like that, but it's because I have more of a thing. You know, for some people, it might be interesting why people act the way they do or where they how they suppress problems or whatever. So that's just sort of something to do while the family dynamics with her and her son, who now wants to have sex in the house... with his girlfriend and, you know, the cheeky daughter. I mean, you know, so you got the family dynamics going. Mm. You've got the relationship with her and Mark Lucas, and of course they just dropped a bomb yesterday.
Well, I thought, I mean, they were leading when I was watching that. I could tell that's where the relationship was going. She was going to end up with him.
But. Well, yeah, but they just dropped a big bomb that might tear them apart.
You can
Which
tell.
Is?
Oh, he said something about he was giving her like a life lesson that he learned when he was a kid, and he was like, oh, you know, if I have kids, you know, I want to remember this life lesson. This is how I want to raise my kids, you know, and now I'm passing this on to you. A few minutes later, she realizes he wants kids. And of course, in her state of life, she's already got two teenagers. She's kind of done having kids.
Right.
And, you know, they can continue to go. And that's a huge, huge
that's
thing
a problem.
In a relationship. Yeah. So, and that was that's pretty much how the episode ended, was with that. Not about the team, not about TK coming back and being addicted to painkillers and stuff.
Yeah, not going to watch the show.
You don't have to.
Parenthood did the same thing with Jason Ritter and Lauren Graham, the real Gilmore Girl.
Yeah, she's the real Gilmore Girl. Yeah, because I could see why she would be done with the kids, because her kids are all bad. She's got bad children on Parenthood. Sorry. I actually did like that show, and I don't remember why I stopped watching it. Huh. I need to go back and watch Parenthood.
It's coming back for season 4.
All right, so next up, let's talk about Suits.
Suits.
I love this show, and they fulfilled my wish.
Which
more Gina Torres.
More
Gina Torres is my wish.
Well,
they gave it to me, because this war between the partners, it's all about her. I love it.
Yeah. Well, and it's I can't believe they outed, what's his name?
I don't know who you. I don't know
oh, no, the kid Mike. Yeah. I mean,
Mike.
The fact that he got outed in the first episode, I was like,
well, I mean, because that was where the finale was. The finale ended up with, there's something I have to tell you, and so
you're left with, does he do it or not?
Yeah, and the answer is yes.
Yeah.
So I had no problem with that, and I liked that Mike finally understood in this episode what Harvey sacrificed for him, or what he was willing to sacrifice for him. And because of that, he then follows what... Because he doesn't want to do... Harvey basically tells him to break up with his girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't want to do it. But then once he realizes what Harvey was willing to do for him, mm-hmm. then he does it.
And then Harvey totally doesn't listen to Jessica's advice.
I know. And he throws
but
that
I
in his
Mike.
Face.
Yeah, I love Mike.
Mike threw
that
in his face. And then he realized... Harvey was like, oh, maybe I was wrong. I was like, yes, dude, you were totally wrong.
Yeah.
And he tries to make it up to Jessica... Because I love that moment on the roof when she was like, I'm going to be angry, I'm going to get over it, and then I'm going to realize that I'm in this just by myself, and that's
oh,
it.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, no, but Harvey has your... No! It just made me sad.
It's like, Harvey has your back, except... Well, you know, and you got to look at it from the one side standpoint. He was doing what the client wanted.
Right.
You know? And so it's like...
But it wasn't his client. That's
yeah, exactly. It wasn't his client, but it's what the client wanted. And it's kind of like with doctors and stuff like that. It's like going... Do you admit somebody to a hospital? I mean, you know, do you let an insurance company tell you that you can or can't do a certain treatment on
right.
somebody?
I mean, so I think morally he did the right thing, but in this war, in the bigger picture of the war, he yeah. screwed her.
Yeah, because okay. I think he doesn't understand the strategy of personalities. He doesn't get
he
that.
Does. He just doesn't care.
How awesome was Donna's revelation to Mike that she and Harvey had
oh,
had a
fling? Oh, I sort of saw that coming.
Well, and I didn't know if it was about Harvey. She just
It was about Harvey.
Okay.
It was about Harvey.
Okay.
It was about Harvey. Oh my gosh, I love Donna so much.
I do too. She's
I love
awesome.
That look on her face. Where she goes, you just get over it. I was like, she's totally not over it.
Yeah,
like, just
yeah.
looking at her.
But I love the way she goes after, the snake guy.
Lewis.
The tension between them is hilarious.
Well, it's kind of like he's a horn dog. Like, he basically is trying to hit on every pretty woman. And he's really attracted to Jessica, but he's completely terrified of her.
Uh-huh.
So every time he kind of almost hits on her, he's terrified that she's going to kill him. And she just gives him a look and he just totally backs down.
Uh-huh.
So if he could get with Jessica, he would. But he can't because she's like not interested. So then Donna, he tries to hit on her, and she's...
And it's they actually share interests,
yeah.
you know, which is the musicals.
Well,
like
Donna's
that.
Playing him.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
She wanted the tickets, though.
And he knows that she is, and that's why he knew he had something to pry information out of her.
Right.
He knew. I love that dynamic of... He's basically, he's always trying to be liked. It's not just that he's hitting on people, he's also just trying to be liked.
And
doesn't know how to do it.
You don't want to like him because he's a worm.
Yeah, but
exactly.
He wants to be respected for his work. He
yeah.
actually is a pretty good lawyer.
He is a good lawyer.
And he wants to be respected as a good lawyer, but nobody respects him. And
because
so,
his personality keeps getting in the way.
Right.
And he doesn't realize that's where the problem is.
And Jessica realized that she timed her whole thing with him wrong. And that look on her face at the end.
Oh.
It's like she realized she picked the wrong partner to talk to.
Yeah, because that was that moment where... Because the other guy had more power, but then Harvey screwed that up.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And he was. It's like, oh, now. And it's like, well, this is a power play. It's like, to be fair, Lewis was talking to her first.
Right.
You know, and it's like going, no, don't, you know, she's showing him favor, except, you know, by turning, but, and then she doesn't really answer any of his questions. I mean, she's like, I know where you're coming from, and she walks away, and I'm like, she blew off Lewis.
For that?
For 5 words?
Well, actually, she should have then followed up, especially if she's playing this whole thing. She should
yeah,
have followed
she should have
up.
Walked right
Lewis, she should have followed Lewis right immediately, but whatever. Anyway, I think this season is going to be very interesting. And then
yeah.
now, next week, we actually see the other partner's going to be in the office
mm-hmm.
and see his interaction and see what kind of how shrewd he is. Because apparently, he's pretty shrewd because
yeah.
of the amount of fear that's going on.
Yeah.
So he's obviously pretty smart. So
yeah.
I think this is all pretty good. I like the fact that this is all the politics going on in the office. We never actually go to a courtroom. It's all about just whatever's
Although
going
next
on.
Week we go
Although
to a
I know for a fact that they built a courtroom set for second season, so we
well,
eventually will get there.
We're getting there next episode. It was in the scenes for next episode.
Oh.
Harvey and the new guy are in a courtroom.
Mike?
No, the new guy. Hardman and
Pearson.
Harvey.
It's Pearson and Hardman.
He's Hardman. She's Pearson.
Pearson, right.
Yeah.
Okay. So, okay, we'll get a... All right, fine. But I like Harvey doing whatever, so I'll be cool with it. All right, so thumbs up for Suits. Very
yes,
excited. This
up.
Whole arc for season 2 looks amazing. Next up is Burn Notice.
Mm-hmm.
And...
Yes. I gave up.
Aside from the... it's amazing that they keep trying to make this be more than what it usually is, and it's still the case of the week and the scam of the week, and I'm so over that. The stuff with Fiona in prison was kind of interesting, but the regular thing was just like ho-hum, you know.
It was the, yeah, it was the usual save somebody of the week thing.
They put Jesse in more danger than usual.
True. Yeah, and he's in the actual credits this time, which is nice, too.
Yeah, and he had to be the guy in the middle, so there was a lot less Michael. Yeah. But the Fiona in jail, it apparently that's this season Fiona's going to be in jail. So, all right.
Yeah, and she's up to her usual tricks in jail.
Fiona, of course she is.
The only thing is she doesn't have small arms or explosives.
But you know what? I'll bet you anything she gets into the laundry room and starts to create her own explosives, because that's all she needs is
Well, she's already creating her own, like, batons and things out of paper, what was it, like, newspapers and salt, because apparently that hardens them, and she was beating people up with it this time, and she already took a battery and created a spark to start a fire, so no, she's fine.
She's totally fine. She's good.
She's got everything she needs.
And she just beat up the biggest bully in town.
Yeah, but I think it's interesting how, because she is going to be in jail from all, if not most of the season at least, how they're setting up that whole storyline for her, that, you know, it's not just her waiting for Michael, and that now we find out at the very end that the girl who we thought was on her side
was actually
working for somebody who she doesn't even know. She's like, I got a phone on, you know, there's a cell phone under my bed, and they just said I had to kill you or they'll kill my sister. And we're like, okay, now who's behind this? You know, out of all the people out there that could want her or Michael, who's behind this? You know, who wants her taken out into prison?
I'm just losing interest in this show. It's just become so routine, and
last season.
Well, I would agree with you, except that by putting Fiona in jail,
it changes it up. It really does,
and
a little bit, but still, we focus most. I would say 75% on the case du jour, and then what little was left was Fiona in jail.
Yes, that's true, but I have to say too, because I was starting to get burned out on Burn Notice last season, but then when this season came back, I was like, it's a hard habit to break, you know, so I'm like, sure, I'll start watching it. But
I almost broke it, and then this podcast made me watch it.
But what I noticed in this one, at least in the two episodes we've seen, is that we're seeing definitely a more expressive Michael. I mean, he's always been really reserved. I mean, he gets, like, annoyed and looks pissed a lot, but this time he's, like, throwing furniture. He's really starting to kind of express that way, which I like.
That bothered me.
I've always waited for him. I'd be like, Michael, they've been on your butt for years, this whole thing. You've been burned, and you're just so cool about it. When are you going to snap?
Well, his snapping in the first episode worked, because it was so new.
Yeah, it was brand new.
Yeah, it was brand new, so it was fine. But then he found out something small, and he throws over his table. I'm like, really? Like, that just seemed childish for him.
Well, I think it's just that she admits that she's in prison.
I agree with Libby on that one. It just seemed not only uncharacteristic, it was like, seriously?
Yeah, why are you throwing tables now?
Get it together, man.
Yeah.
Spy, for God's sakes.
That's so funny. Yeah, so for me, it's kind of like, it's coming finally, but I mean, I would have preferred he had reactions like this earlier on when he was still blacklisted, but
yeah, and so Fiona brings, so obviously he's in love. He loves her. Yeah. All right.
So I'm still with it.
Sideways to down on Burn Notice.
My thumb fell asleep.
Yeah. So, next up, let's talk about Tron. Uprising.
I thought this episode was pretty good. It was written by the showrunners, by Kitsis and Horowitz, and it really kind of gave a clear agenda for where they're going for the thrust of the series. Because in the previous episodes, you know, the pilot was kind of weak. I mean, face it, it didn't draw me in. I love Tron, and I heard some of the others say they love Tron too, but the pilot didn't draw them in. But the two-parter I thought was pretty good, and this one I thought was a good follow-up.
Well, and I think they resolved part of the problem in the two-parter, which was that B-plot, which was boring and didn't have a really good purpose. And this time, the B-plot actually serves a purpose.
Yes.
Which is to basically turn Beck's friends against him. So they basically turn the people against the renegade or Tron. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was actually brilliant. I was like, since when are bad guys that smart, you know?
It's fascinating psychology.
Yeah, because because it's called Uprising, you think the entire point is that Tron is going to get the people behind him because they are being oppressed, and so he's going to get this army, and so you're waiting for that to happen. And in the two-parter, he gets his first general that's going to start recruiting for him. And I was like, okay, we're going. But then in the very next thing, we have a complete huge setback where Tron actually stops his drilling from blowing up the whole city. Because it was going to have, like, if they kept drilling, it was going to have some sort of nuclear reaction that was going to blow up the city. And he plants a bomb to try to stop that from happening. But actually, even before his bomb goes off, the nuclear reactor thing goes off anyway. But they have footage of him tampering with it. So they make it seem like he did it. And so now he's the big villain. And so I was like, that's really smart. Yeah. So now all the people want to capture him. They want him dead. Mm-hmm. And they recruited one of his friends to help them figure out a way. But because they don't know who he is, and his friend doesn't know who he is. But they ended up recruiting one of his friends to help them capture him. So I was like, wow, that was pretty good. Like, I like the I didn't see that coming. You know,
I think it's kind of interesting that they chose to put this on Disney XD because, I mean, it's animated, but there's misconception that's been going around for decades that, oh, animation's for children. And if we've learned nothing from Family Guy, it's that all animation is not for children. But this is a little heady for kids, especially, you know, preteen boys. So,
yeah, I liked it. I think I like where the show is now going. Because it's not just going to be a really easy move for him to be this superhero and he's going to get this following and it's just going to
And he's going to liberate everybody and they're going to be glad.
No, it's not even. It's very kind of Dark Knight-ish where the people don't like you. They think you're a bad guy. Yeah. And you're doing it for them, but they don't realize it. So it's kind of complex. I like it. I like where they're going with this. So
that's what you're going to have the complexity. And you get that. Yeah, you're right. You get that with a lot of the superhero things where the people aren't quite sure what to think or some of the people like them, but I
actually say that the more complicated superheroes are like that. Simple ones are not. Like Superman, everybody loves Superman.
Yeah, but Spider-Man has the dichotomy. Yeah. Batman does too.
Yeah, so I think that this is, but I mean, when they showed all the people that were again, there was like this huge crowd and they were all cheering for his capture and his death. I was like, whoa.
So he has an uphill battle, basically.
Yes, very much so. And then it was a great shot where they have the actual Tron, which is Bruce Boxleitner, and then Beck, and they're standing side by side watching the crowd cheering for his downfall. And, you know, just their little conversation right there was pretty good. So I think thumbs up. I cannot wait for more Tron.
Yep.
I just wish the animation was better.
I
think the animation is cool. They use a lot of the CGI. They have the same CGI vehicles and designs from the film.
Yeah, I just don't like how he keeps putting his hands through things and stuff like that. I mean, I know he's got that little machine, but it's like, okay, is that solid or is it not solid?
Well, it's not. It depends on what form it's in. When it looks like lines, then he can put his hands in there and fix stuff, and then it turns solid. It works.
It's how they live in their world.
Yeah, that's a conceit they've always had in the series.
Okay, yeah, whatever. So it works. But anyway. So I think thumbs up. I think that wraps us up for this week. If you have any feedback, send to tvcampfire@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter. We're on Facebook. You can listen to us on Get the Point Radio, KryptonRadio.com, Weenopolis, and iTunes. And we'll talk to you guys next week.
Bye.
Later.
Bye. Bye.